Welcome back to Techtopia, the podcast about a brighter future. I'm John Biggs. Today on the show, we have the founders of Ever Widening Circles. This is Techtopia. This episode of Technotopia is sponsored by CheapTranscription.io. CheapTranscription offers 10 cent per minute transcription using our happy robots or 85 cents per minute using our human assistants. CheapTranscription.io is cheaper and faster than everyone else. CheapTranscription.io. This episode of Technotopia is brought to you by Typewriter.plus. Typewriter.plus is a full-service editorial agency that brings amazing editors from places like the New York Times and TechCrunch to work on your writing. Need a blog post, a white paper, a presentation? The Typewriter team can write or edit anything on nearly any topic. Visit them at typewriter.plus for a free quote. That's typewriter.plus, typewriter.plus. Welcome back to Techtopia, the podcast about a better future. I'm John Biggs. Today on the show, we have something I don't think we've ever had before. We have two folks, Liesl and Linda Ulrich. Why don't you guys introduce yourselves?
Yeah, I'm Dr. Linda Ulrich. I'm the founder of a global endeavor to change the negative dialogue about our times at Ever Widening Circles.
And I'm Liesl Ulrich-Verderber, Dr. Linda's daughter, and I'm the COO of Ever Widening Circles.
Okay, so I'm a journalist. When I hear what you guys are trying to do, I'm at once heartened and happy and also deeply cynical and find it almost impossible. So which side should I remain? I guess is the answer.
Well, my number one discovery, I should clarify that I was an ordinary web user like anyone else just 7 years ago. And So I think this problem that we're going to talk about today deserved the eyes of an outsider. And now I've published over 1,000 articles about insight and innovation. And I tell you, I started just like you, John. And now I see the problem with such great clarity that I feel like I'm just on a mission to get the word out to people that what we are seeing on the internet is only a slice of reality. It's not like some grand like evil plot. It's just the way things worked out. And so I guess I've become the town crier for the rest of the story.
What is the rest of the story? So you guys focus primarily on good news, right? And this is actually a podcast. It's completely about it's an idea of a better future. So this fits perfectly.
Exactly.
So what does that mean?
Yeah, so for us, you know, we are writing about the things that anyone could point to and say, wow, it's still an amazing world out there. So we will talk about, you know, insights that are happening in science, incredible pieces of knowledge, stories that we all should know about. And our goal with that is to not just leave you feeling uplifted for 1 second. You know, we love the story of, you know, the cute puppy getting adopted or, you know, some sort of flash in the pan story that makes you feel good for 1 second. But our goal with this is to really create content that leaves you feeling truly uplifted about the world, knowing a little bit more, feeling more knowledgeable, because we found so often that when people come to our site and they've read articles about people who are saving the rainforest using old cell phones or incredible ways that people are using beautiful photography to help catalyze people towards, you know, being aware of what's happening to our oceans. We find that when people are more knowledgeable, they're able to sort of take in all the bad news that we see out there and be able to comprehend it better and feel less depressed by all of that, because they know that somebody, almost any problem that's out there in the world, is being tackled by one of these great thought leaders. And our goal is to really feature all those thought leaders doing incredible things that don't get talked about a whole lot on typical news outlets.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest issue with news, obviously, is that if it bleeds, it leads, that kind of thing. How do you find it's the entire news apparatus is designed to find outliers. And I guess there's two types of outliers. There's obviously the outlier of like a cute kitten that's like batting at a ball of yarn, and then there's the outlier of somebody just got hit by a truck. So you have so you only want to cover those two outliers. How do you find the good outliers? How do you find the good stuff?
Yeah, so for us, our team, we tend to follow our curiosity. We have sort of become tuned to writing about things that pique our curiosity. We like to say that we're sort of vast generalists. We are not an expert in any particular field, but we know a great story when we find what makes us curious about something that we want to dig in more. And I think that we, as a team, have been able to develop a really strong eye for things that pique our curiosity and make us feel uplifted at the same time. And I think there's a lot of content. We have to do a lot of digging to find those stories. Mm-hmm. And that's why you don't see we're not churning out an article every 2 minutes, because, you know, it is important that we follow our curiosity, that we write really beautiful pieces, that we aren't just adding to the noise of the internet. But, you know, even though we are not churning out content, we're still booked out probably 3 or 4 months in advance with great stories we want to write about, because there is so much out there to find.
And John, I'll answer your question with a direct, you know, just personal experience, is that before I went on this journey, I saw the same depressing, overwhelming, often, you know, world that everyone sees. And then I got really, really disciplined about one piece of knowledge. I realized that my click is a vote.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think most of us know, or most of us suspect, that someone is counting every click we make. But that one statement, someone is counting every click we make, seemed more like a evil conspiracy to me than an actual thing. But what I figured out was that this is just the way the internet evolved. We went from 1993, 130 websites, to 10 years later, 40 million. And there mm-hmm. had to be a way for things to, I mean, the internet was built with good intention by engineers running in and waving their arms and following their passions every day, which was exciting as can be. But then once we got to that 40 million websites mark, there had to be something that rose to the top to get us to still be able to connect, which is what the engineers had in mind, with each other, with knowledge and all that. And you know what it became? Attention. The internet became an attention economy. So nothing matters there, good or bad, except what we give our attention to. And that rises to the top. And once people realize, if I can get about 25% of people on the planet to just understand that one fundamental thing, you know, there's a great study done by the World Economic Forum that proved that you really only need about 25% of people to believe a new notion, and then it sweeps through society. Mm-hmm. And I think we can reimagine the internet. I really do. I think all the communities I'm involved in, I think I could get 25% to go, "Whoa, you're kidding me," and just stop clicking on the chaos.
Fascinating. So I guess the question is, if you guys do everything right, what is the internet? What does news look like in 10 years?
Okay. So I will share in the tiniest microcosm a real important experience that I had. I was at a tailgate party when I was early in Everwinding Circles land, and I used to tell mm-hmm. people to turn off the news. That was my recommendation. Let's just send the news a message and turn it off, and they'll get the idea that we want some positivity. And I failed to ask what someone's job was once at a tailgate party, and I gave them my best raving maniac lecture about the bad news in the world. And after I was done, she kindly said, "Hey, gosh, wow, can I improve your way of thinking about that?" And then she introduced herself as one of the a lead person in one of the most important journalist organizations in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And she really made me think twice about this news fact that I was recommending. Because it is important that we know about the world. It's important to the decisions we make, the recommendations we give our children. But the bottom line is, just as you said a few minutes ago, the news is about, it's only newsworthy if it's an outlier. Steven Pinker likes to point to this funny little example. If two people are killed by a driverless car, it's on the news around and around all day long. But 1.5 million people lose their lives in cars with drivers every year, and we don't hear about that.
Mm-hmm.
So
yep, exactly.
I think we've got to keep reminding ourselves and our children that it's only newsworthy if it rarely happens.
Mm-hmm.
And then Liesl has a nice little thing that she does better than me when she tries to convey to people this notion of going on a news diet instead of a news fast.
Yeah. I think, you know, one of the ways that I think we can dramatically change not just the kind of media that we see, but the way that we consume media and how it makes us feel. If we start to think about the way we consume media and news as a diet, right? Like we need to have a good, nutritious, you know, meal. Let's say it's a great steak dinner. That's maybe like the great piece of hard-hitting journalism that we all need to consume now and then. But if we're having that steak dinner every 10 minutes when we go to our Twitter feed, that's as unhealthy as, you know, kind of consuming all of the fast headlines and sort of junk food headlines that we consume as we're scrolling through, you know, our social media feeds. And so what we like to say to people is think of media as a diet. Like, are you eating a balanced diet? Are you consuming too much of a particular kind of media? Are you finding that you're balancing enough, you know, good positive stuff in there? And I like to think of ourselves almost as like the salad in that media diet, right? As we're not just giving you the little sort of bonbon, like, you know, candy. We're saying, hey, you know, here's something. This is what meaningful, positive content can look like. Stuff that leaves you feeling really uplifted and fulfilled and able to, you know, consume the rest of your media diet. But this is what that looks like. And I don't think a lot of people treat the way they consume media, treat the way they consume the internet in a way looking at it like a diet. And I think that if we were able to shift our focus a little bit more to being a little more conscious of how and the amount that we're consuming of information, we'd start to see, I think, a switch in how people consume media, how it makes them feel. And I think then a ripple effect down the line in the future of the kind of media that gets produced. We're right now in a really sort of fast media pace right now, and that doesn't always produce content that gives people a really healthy view of the world.
Yeah, it's really about balance.
And so for us, I really think that the future of media and media consumption is going to be producing stuff that's a little more balanced or a lot more balanced and giving people the right tools to consume all that media with.
I want to keep trying to chip away at the cynicism. I want to
give
me an example of something that you guys see. Oh, it's important because, I mean, if I'm I have to convince myself as well, because I want this to be true. So it's going to be interesting. Give me an example of something that's similar to what you guys have done that has that positive aspect and has kind of swept the world. I'm thinking just offhand, sort of, I guess, religion and self-revenance, all that other good stuff. But nothing has really hit the mainstream. I'm trying to think of a mainstream example of what you guys are trying to pull off.
Okay. So I think I refer to the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge a lot in this, right? There was something magically wonderful. And I really am using two separate words there, right? There's something magically wonderful in the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge that swept the world. We were the heroes in that story, John. We were each the heroes in that story. And that's a powerful common human instinct, is to help and to have fun and to enjoy delight together. And that whole ALS challenge hit just about every Maslow's every level of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know? Mm-hmm. It really did give you a feeling that you had influence on something much bigger than yourself. And so I'll give you an example of how this worked. So have you heard of a guy, most people haven't, named Topher White and the Rainforest Connection?
Yeah, sounds familiar. Yeah, I've definitely heard of Topher, but
glance at Topher's situation, but it's a great example of how we see the world and how everybody has an opportunity to see the world. Okay, so we've written two articles about Topher and the Rainforest Connection. He was an engineer who went on vacation in Sumatra, and he was in a given reserve on vacation, and all of a sudden the staff just dropped everything they were doing and ran into the forest. And he had no idea what just went on, but he's the kind that would follow him. So he goes running behind them, and they had heard, they had picked up, their careful ear had picked up the sound of a chainsaw starting on a tree that was God knows how old. Illegal logging in the rainforest. Just 500 yards from this gibbon reserve. And it astounded Topher White that they couldn't hear that chainsaw so close. And he figured out that the problem with rainforest deforestation and illegal logging is that it's hard to monitor. The officials can't swoop in and save anything fast enough because the rainforest is so loud with natural sound. So he figured out a way to take old cell phones, which we all have stuck away in a drawer, and tune them to only pick up the frequency of a chainsaw. So now he's protecting vast places and could literally remove the same amount of carbon dioxide from the environment as the same amount as all the trucks and transportation combined every year. If we stopped illegal logging with this one simple, scalable idea, he puts them in trees about every 3 kilometers apart. And the minute a chainsaw is fired up, the signal goes up to a satellite, down to locals. Very important. He enlists the help of communities to save their own environments, right? Because people, these are lovely people that are seeing their world changing right before their eyes. And then they swoop in and stop illegal loggers. So we had written 2 articles about Topher and how that process is progressing. And then we had last fall. Do you remember, John, last fall that you turn on the news and all you could see was the rainforest burning in Brazil?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm as crushed by every single one of those news stories as you are, except for I can hold that sense, that feeling in one hand and hope in the other, because I know about the Topher Whites of the world. So that's why a balanced diet of what's happening in the world, a balanced knowledge about what's happening in the world is so incredibly important. Because I can get behind Topher. I can send him a few bucks. I can send him my old cell phone. I can actually have an impact on a problem that seems so immeasurably larger than me. The same is true of a wonderful innovator named Damien Mander, who has figured out that single mothers make the very best game wardens in Africa. Same thing. I came across that story, I think it was last spring, of the last male white rhino dying. And I just want to beat my head on the table. But then I had written an article about Damien Mander and this ingenious, unbelievable story of a crossover hero. That's someone who comes to a problem from a completely different field. He was actually a sniper in Iraq. And he figured out that what they were actually needing to fight in Africa to save endangered species was a kind of a counterinsurgency approach. And the story is so full of wonder, I can't even tell you. It's such an amazing thing. Jane Goodall is on his board, and he is changing communities and people's lives in wonderful ways beyond saving endangered species. So I can see the story.
So let's get people over to the site. Yeah. I want people to go over the site, Ever Widening Circles. This reminds me of the F. Scott Fitzgerald quote, the test of the first rate intelligence is the ability to hold 2 opposed ideas at the same time and still function, which is pretty, I think, important here. And I think that's exactly what you guys are talking about.
That's exactly what we're talking about.
Fascinating. All right. So the website is everwideningcircles.com, and you guys have a brand new app out, right?
Yep. We have a brand new app out. Serendipitously for sort of these times, we have it out right now. And we built the app because we felt like people needed a place to go to start or end their days or go when they're on their phone, to take a break, to be able to, you know, take a moment to find something beautiful in the world, be able to watch a positive story, be able to absorb a positive story, and then, you know, go into the rest of their day with a sense of positivity and a sense of, you know, able, like we were saying, hold sort of 2 ideas in one hand, be able to be more present in the world in a positive way.
So I always imagined the app. So we started back in November, never dreaming we'd be here today. But we started the app with this imagining that you could use the app as kind of like the antidote for the daily news. So you get the bing, breaking news, and instead of hitting that button, you keep our button on your home screen and you hit that one.
Yeah.
And then hit the surprise me button and dive into something you think you will never be interested in. I'm telling you, We have written some articles. We have this head writer, Samantha Burns, who is unbelievable. And she's written some articles about such counterintuitive wonders. And, you know, you land on one of those just after you hear a bit of terrible breaking news, and you can still walk with a spring in your step.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
all right. I look forward to giving it a try. I know,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna give it a try. I'm gonna try to walk with spring in my step. Thank you for joining me, guys.
You're so welcome. Thank you.
This has been Technotopia. I'm John Biggs. We will see you next week.
Technotopia is brought to you by Happy Fun Corp. Happy Fun Corp is a design-driven technology company in Brooklyn, New York that specializes in building mobile and web applications for startups and Fortune 500 companies. Whether it's a new mobile or web application that will help people experience the internet in a fun new way, or software that will interface with a new piece of top-secret hardware, Happy Fun Corp is always up to the challenge. Big or small, Happy Fun Corp loves building software and loves working with great people. Come build with them. HappyFunCorp.com.